today on Her Turf at the Olympics.
We will catch up with Cindy McLaughlin, who broke her own world record to win gold in the 400-meter hurdles.
We'll be joined by Noelle Quinn, head coach of the WNBA Seattle Storm, and Muffet McGraw, former women's basketball coach at Notre Dame, for a talk about how to get more women into coaching roles.
This podcast is presented by NordicTrack from iFit.
We are now joined by Olympic gold medalist Sydney McLaughlin. Sydney, welcome. First of all, by the way, I'm hearing a lot of about you from my friend Lolo here.
So I had to beef you up. Come on.
I've got the 411. I want to know, you were 16 when you qualified for the Rio Olympics. So now 21, you broke a world record, won the gold medal. Who's the first person you called?
My coach.
And what did you say?
I was like, it wasn't the neatest race, but I got the job done.
Wait, so you're telling me your coach is Bobby Kersey, correct?
Correct.
He's not in Tokyo. You called him like from inside the track, or was he in the warm-up track, or did you actually have
to? He was at the warm-up track.
Oh, nice. So you couldn't even wait to get out. You had to immediately talk to him. That's amazing. A lot of people don't know this, but you switched coaches a year out from the games, and that's actually, a lot of athletes don't like to do that because there's like knowing the 1 year slump. So were you nervous to make that switch?
A little bit. It's always uncertain in a year like that right before the Olympics, but I knew it was something I felt that I had to do. And Bobby, you know, this is his 11th Olympics, I think, coaching. So he's been around a few times and I know that he has a lot of knowledge.
What was the conversation like on his end when you called him? What was he saying?
You know, he said we can figure out some of the mistakes at a later date. Just celebrate right now and enjoy this moment.
That's amazing. He's an icon in the sport. And now you are, Sydney. I have to ask you what your mental state was like before these races, knowing that in order to win, you were going to need to have a personal best or a world record, because you and Dalila, the last four times you have lined up have just been record-breaking history moments. What's the mental state like that for you?
Just focusing on my lane. You know, we do know that every time we step on the track, it's going to be something fast. So just mentally preparing for that and just having faith that God's going to carry me all the way through.
When you were running the hurdles, because, you know, I'm a 100-meter hurdler, and I was reading that you were switching up your steps for these games, and you went to a 14-step approach. Now, that is something very technically hard to do. What was your strategy going into the finals? Were you able to execute by removing one step? So, in reference, Dalila does 15 steps. You were implementing a 14-step, which is removing a step each between each hurdle. How difficult was that for you?
You know, we realized earlier in the season that when I get up to full speed, I have to take one less step. My stride wants to open up that much. So it ended up working to our advantage. You know, you're one step closer between every hurdle. So we've just been trying to perfect that and really figure out what my perfect stride pattern looks like.
Okay, non-Olympian question here. And I apologize, but why is that so tough? And what does it feel like when you're trying to make that change?
It is a little bit more of a push. Yes. And my stride is elongating. So the more tired I get, the harder that is. But it also helps because you are going a lot faster because you're taking one less step.
Wow.
I actually try to remove a step in the 100-meter hurdles to the start. I went from an 8-step to a 7 approach. And like she said, you're more powerful, but it definitely helps you as you progress through the hurdles. But the difference between me and Sydney is she has a longer race. So she's dealing with fatigue factors at the end of it. So it was just amazing to be able to watch you execute. And I know how difficult that was for you.
Do you ever lose track of the steps that you're counting?
Yeah, I don't count them while I'm running. It's more of just a feeling, you know, which leg you're going to take off of. And sometimes, you know, you have to chop a little bit and figure it out as it comes. But
can I ask you this, Sydney? So you just ran this race like a pure vet. And I know this is your second Olympics. You're now the Olympic champion, so as you should. But you seem so calm. You know, was there a moment in the race where, you know, Dalila was out. She was pushing that rhythm quite well. Was there a moment in the race where you felt like, ooh, maybe the gap is too big. I might not be able to close it to win?
You know, I know that she's a very fierce competitor. I know that she always takes the race out. So I was definitely prepared for that. I just, during the race, mentally, I had to make sure that I was focused on what I had to do, which was, you know, just get within striking distance so that when I came off of 10, I could just push all the way home.
I know that you all are so cool, calm, and collected, and that's part of the mindset of an athlete, and that's why you're champions, right? But have you processed the moment, not only for yourself, but also when we look back in history, seeing what you guys are able to do and continuing to follow the other one up with the world record or winning, what does that mean to you?
It's just amazing to be a part of history, to be a part of this generation that's pushing the boundaries of what's possible. And, you know, it hasn't fully hit me yet, but I do know that for both of us and for even Femke, who took third, there's so much more in the tank and there's so much, we can go so much faster. I think, you know, we haven't even scratched the surface of what's possible.
Okay, so I know you have a birthday coming up, and if you're going to continue doing this Olympic thing, which you're really good at, how are you going to celebrate at the games? Like, I had it, my Olympics was at, my birthday was right before
I ran. Your birthday's tomorrow!
Yeah, but it was right before I ran the finals for the 100-meter hurdle, so I wouldn't even have cake. You're finished now. How are you going to celebrate?
I'm going to hold off. You know, Saturday, which is my birthday, is also possibly the 4x4 if they put me on, so we're going to wait and see first what they decide before I decide to eat any cake.
Oh, come on. You can't sneak a peek.
No, she's got to stay focused. 4x4 is everything for
awful.
Team USA.
All right, I got you. Well, happy early birthday. I should be saying that to both of you. But Sydney, thank you so much for joining us. It has been so much fun watching you do your thing.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now it's time for a body and mind moment presented by Nordic Track, featuring one of track and field's most social media savvy power couples, Olympic long jumper Tara Davis and Paralympic sprinter Hunter Woodall. Here's Elizabeth Beisel with more.
Body and mind moments presented by Nordic Track from iFit.
Outside running strong, but look at Hunter Woodall kicking into gear down the backstretch.
He is absolutely flying right now.
Made in the women's long jump, Tara Davis improves her lead from 22 feet a half inch out to a collegiate record 22 feet 9 inches.
Tara Davis and Hunter Woodall, you are competing in the Olympics and the Paralympics this summer, respectively. But you've got this amazing social media presence and YouTube channel. And I want to know, does having fun and having this outlet play into you both performing your best?
We're pretty laid back people. So yeah, we're focused in our own ways, but us having fun is our way of focusing. Like if we're like too in the zone, like we're not performing our best, but we're not ourselves. And that's just not the way you want to go into a meet.
We like having fun. I think we try to not do things in our life that we don't have fun doing. So as long as we can do that and then we still show up on when it's time and do what we need to do and compete well and win medals and make teams, like that's all that matters. And if other people are rocking with us and they enjoy it too, like we love that.
Yeah. So do you bring that same mindset to your training, you know, doing what has to be done, but also at the same time making it fun, which I know is sometimes hard to do?
Anytime we're together, especially like working out, it's something that we both share in common. We both love. So it's always fun. So when we can do it in the comfort of our own home, we don't have to leave somewhere. If it's a bad day, it's raining outside like today, being inside, having like treadmills or bikes or things that can offer that like same level of workout and things that we need to do, while also, like I said, staying in the comfort of your home and being in each other's company, it just doesn't get much better than that.
Body and Mind Moments, presented by Nordic Track from iFit.
Welcome back. Women's participation in sports has made major strides since Title IX passed in 1972. But in coaching, it's a bit more complicated. Before Title IX, more than 90% of women's college teams were coached by women. Now, it's actually closer to 40%. And it's not just at the college level where the gender balance is skewed. So to talk about this, we're joined now by Noelle Quinn, head coach of the WNBA's Seattle Storm, and Muffet McGraw, former women's basketball coach at Notre Dame. It is so wonderful to have both of you here. And I want to talk about the landscape briefly, because Muffet, and I'm sorry to date you here, but you started coaching college basketball in 1980. 5 years before Noelle was born. But how did you see the landscape change during your time as a coach?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. When Title IX came out, so many women were in coaching, and it was just important that women coached women. Then as Title IX came along and the equity got a little bit better, the salaries got a little bit better, suddenly you had men coming over because it was a great way to make a living. They couldn't get into the men's game. There were so many coaches over there. So to come to the women's game where you could make that salary, I think that was one of the big differences.
Noelle, you are one of the three former WNBA players serving as a head coach of a WNBA team. Can you speak about the changes the WNBA has made in terms of getting more women into the coaching pipeline?
Yeah, more women, but also former players as well. I think it's very important to have players who have experienced our league, who have, you know the ins and outs of our league, and to then lead these teams, lead these organizations. We have so much value. We have so much to give. We're equipped with so much. I think it's our responsibility then to give it back to our younger generations.
What's the value? What's the inside information that can help more so than if you were going to pick somebody from the outside?
Yeah, you know, there's a difference as a player in understanding and being in a locker room. You go through the trenches with your teammates, running sprints, traveling, all the things that go along with being a player in our league. I was a part of a league as a player for 12 seasons. And so you see the development, you see the transition in things, bigger money, bigger salaries, bigger visitation on TV and things of that nature. And so just as a player, you understand the grind, and to now go to that transition as a coach, you just have a better understanding of your players. You can talk their language. You just understand the day-to-day that you go through as a player, mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally.
The relatability factor. When a woman gets chosen to coach a men's team, it's treated sometimes, it feels like a promotion. But what needs to happen to change that mentality? Muffet, I'll start with you.
Well, I think it's great that the NBA is hiring women to be on the sidelines, to be assistant coaches. But what I would love to see is those women coming back to the WNBA and being a head coach. Come back to the college game and be a head coach. Learn what you want from the NBA. They are some of the best coaches in the country, in the world. So take that knowledge and bring it back to the women's game. I'm not as interested in seeing women coaching men as I am women coaching women.
Do you think that it's a situation where most women who are promoted to become an assistant coach with the NBA would want to continue in that trajectory? Or is it different for each individual case? What would you say, Noelle?
Yeah, I think it's different. You know, you have women with a desire to actually coach men and enjoy it. You have, women with a desire to coach other women. I think to each their own, but like Coach is saying, take the knowledge that you're gaining from every level and bring it back and make our game better, grow our game. It's one thing to have people in leadership positions, women specifically, coaching other young women who look like them. It just makes a difference. It makes them go harder. They strive, to want to one day maybe be in that leadership role as well. So, no knock on any individual who would like to coach in the NBA. Just get better and continue to just dive into your craft and make our game, grow our game.
Muffet, no one is saying that men can't coach, but why aren't women getting these opportunities? I have to tell you about experience in track and field. There's Brittany Reese, who's a multiple Olympic medal winner. And one of her most topped pins is, she says, I'm going to be a head track coach one day. What are the obstacles she would face, as opposed to a male athlete trying to get into coaching?
Well, I think athletic directors, first of all, need to recognize that women should coach women. Then I think it's great for the student athletes to have that role model. But they also have to understand that women look at jobs very differently than men do. When a job opens, a man's going to walk right into the AD's office, or he's going to pick up the phone and call that AD and say, I want that job. I'm going to be great at it. Women, we're very loyal. We're going to look at things. We're going to step back a little bit and see, what are the qualifications? What do I need to have? Checking all those boxes. And if we don't have one or two, we're going to say we're not qualified. Where a man will look at that and say, oh, I can learn that. They just approach it with a little different level of confidence. We're also looking at our family situation. Is this a time for me to move my family? What exactly does this job entail? And the ADs have to understand that women are going to take a little bit longer. We're not going to make that first move, maybe be as aggressive. We're going to sit back and wait. And that is unfortunate. We need to be more like men. We need to be more aggressive and go after those jobs.
I have been thinking about that so much after watching, especially I was watching one of your press conferences, Muffet, and what you said. And it really made me think about, okay, wait a minute. How much of the ownership as well is on me, is on other women who are looking for certain roles, right? And like you just said, and treating it in a way where we need to be more vocal. Noelle, what do you think about that?
I think it's important. You know, another thing is to the experience and the comfort level. Maybe you don't even know the job exists because there wasn't a chance for you to get the knowledge in that job. But understanding that, you know, we are equipped, we are more than capable to have these opportunities. But, you know, again, sometimes it's understanding that ADs hire who they're comfortable with. So maybe women need to have those leadership roles as well. So then they in turn begin to hire other women.
Yes, absolutely. And I remember one time walking into a room with a ton of NFL GMs early in my career, and a woman who was mentoring me said, "You just walk in there and fake it." Right. And I've always thought about that. Not that you should fake it, but hey, like you've got to get that confidence from somewhere. And sometimes it's part of just playing that game. At these Olympics, Dawn Staley is the first Black woman to coach the United States women's basketball team. What does that mean?
I'm excited for it, you know, to see women of color getting that opportunity. And you saw in the SEC final this year, you had two Black women coaching for the first time ever. You look in the Final Four, we have two Black women coaching for the first time ever as head coaches. So seeing Noelle on the sideline, Neil Ivey at Notre Dame and Noelle Quinn at Seattle, I'm excited for the future.
This is a question for both of you guys. We discuss plenty of other gender disparities on the show, from equal pay to competitive opportunities. How are those disparities tied into the lack of women in coaching?
Well, I think that there's a huge problem with that. You know, women don't ask for raises. Men ask for a raise four times as often. And when we do ask, we don't offer enough. We're always expecting less. And I wish that we would just learn to expect more and to have that confidence in ourselves. But, you know, Noelle hit it right on the head when she said people hire people who look like them. All the ADs, basically 80%, 90% are white men. We need more women in those leadership roles. We need more women mentors. We need more women we can look up to. As you know, even in your profession, you have to have women in this. Sports is a man's world still. We have a long way to go.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah.
But conversations like this. Noelle, you want to add something?
Yeah, I was just going to agree with that. You know, it's so interesting too, understanding the amount of time the WNBA has been around. Something as simple as the coaches not having a union is important. So sometimes you don't even know what amount of money you should be making compared to your counterparts. And so that's something that I think we can continue to push the envelope and grow the conversation around, understanding we need to be together as a unit and just get you know, the amount of money that we deserve and respect level that we deserve.
And hopefully that conversation leads to action. Muffet, how do we get more female leaders in sports?
You know, we need more female leaders across the board in every corporation, business, and in the country. But I think it starts when you're young, when you're fifth and sixth graders, when you're 5 and 6 year olds go out to play soccer. It's always somebody's dad who's coaching the team. Why isn't it somebody's mom? There's so many women that have this experience playing soccer. And half the time, the men don't know the rules either. So
yes,
we can certainly
that's
learn.
True.
But then kids are going out and they're seeing somebody's mom coaching. And it's not unusual. So when they get to AAU and grade school and high school, it's not unusual to see women. And then it just starts to be normal. And that's what I want it to be. I don't want it to be like, oh, wow, there's a woman coaching a boys team or whatever it is. I want that to be the norm.
It's shocking you say that, because I didn't realize how normal it was. It's even on the elite level. As a three-time Olympian, 8 out of the 66 coaches in the Pyeongchang Olympics were females. That means the rest were coached, all the female athletes there, the rest were coached by men. And throughout my career, I've only had one coach, and most of they've been assistant coaches, not head coaches, the assistant or the volunteer coach. And so it's very powerful what you're saying, that we need to see more in those leadership roles, and that's how we can get the momentum started.
Absolutely. I just think it's critical for us to see women as leaders. And we talked earlier about how women need to do a little more. We need to do a little bit more, being more aggressive, going after those jobs. Mm-hmm. But we're just not being represented. And I think that comes from the top presidents of universities. I think it's 30%. Athletic directors, 10% are women. So we don't have women in the leadership roles to do the hiring. And that's what's really holding us back.
Noelle, you're living this right now. I mean, you are living one of those high leadership roles. You've gone through this process. What do you think? What have you observed recently that you think is good advice for how to make more change?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important what Coach McGraw is referring to. When you're a little kid, a youth, and you see women in leadership roles, then now you understand there is a possibility that you then can see yourself in that role. But if you never see yourself or see anyone in that role at a young age, you never may have never dreamed to even be a coach or athletic director or a CEO of a company, because maybe I didn't understand or visualize myself in that role or even know that that role existed. And so now, you know, I have that responsibility as a Black woman in my leadership role to show other young Black women that it is possible to not only play and play basketball, but you can lead a team, you can own a team, and you can be fierce in doing that because you're equipped and you have the tools to do it. And so I think it's just a matter of getting women in these positions. And so that can then create dreams create dreams for other youth and other young women to see that it is possible.
I just had a mental realization that every soccer coach I had as a child was a man. After Muffet said that, I was thinking that.
Once they say it, it's shocking.
Yes.
It seems so normal until it's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, why does it have to be an anomaly? What about you?
Absolutely. I just said, all throughout my career, basketball and in track, it was predominantly male. Like I said, the females were there, but more of like the supportive assistant or volunteer coach. So I just have to ask you guys both, since that's so shocking, what is the biggest challenges that you face as a female head coach that maybe per se just the men don't have to deal with? Like, if you guys do you feel more pressure to have better stats, you know, or they would try to diminish your coaching capabilities just due to the fact that you are a female?
Well, I think female leaders are judged differently than men. Women expect different things from men than they do from women. And in my role as coach, when something, I would be tough on them, and I think that they all were ready for that. But, you know, there's a little bit of them that's a little sensitive and says, well, maybe she doesn't like me. But if a man says those same things, well, that's just the way men are. You just
yeah,
sort of are treated differently. And so you're looked at differently. The referees look at us differently. They yell more at the women. Hey, get back in the box. Don't talk to me. Men are on the court talking to them and they're saying, oh, they're just fighting for their team. You look at women like Serena, you know, she's being emotional and hysterical when she argues a call. And then that men's tennis player throws rackets and has a complete emotional breakdown. And, you know, he's just has passion for the game. So I think we're judged differently. And I think that's the toughest hurdle for us.
Wow. That is really eye-opening. What have you experienced?
I think she hit it right on the nail. Female athletes get judged in the same way, like super emotional, or, you know, if they don't win, it comes down to something other than performance and athletic capability. So it's just quite interesting that that goes even on the coaching side, not just on the athlete side.
Wow. Noelle, how about you? You have any observations from your time and your career?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. It's not great at all to understand that we are judged differently. But I think for me, it kind of pushes me in a way to want to be better. There is pressure to perform. There is pressure because these opportunities are few and far between. And is it fair? No. But, you know, it's up to us to show that the results can be great if you continue to give us the opportunity.
Amazing. Well, I mean, if we're going to talk about the disparities as being a female head coach, there's got to be an advantage. What is the advantage of being a female head coach that you guys, would you be able to provide more insight to the athletes? I mean, because I've never been coached by a female, what would be the benefit of being coached by a female?
I think Noelle said it earlier that you have the advantage of saying, and I did this in my coaching career, I would point to my assistant coach and say, she played in college. She won a national championship. She played in the WNBA. She won an NBA, WNBA title. So you can be exactly like her, and having somebody that's right there that also went through the whole thing about the academics in college and what that was like, so many things. But I am concerned with the fact that we're judged on our gender. You know, when a woman is hired and doesn't do well, it's not that she wasn't successful. It's that, well, I tried hiring a woman and it didn't work. Now I got to go back to hiring a man. Where men are never judged on their gender, they're always judged on their ability.
How does gender disparity in coaching lead to gender disparity in pay and other things? Noelle, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes along with, you know, because there is not a lot of opportunity, then there is not a lot of experience. Not a lot of experience that comes with it. So, you know, sometimes we couple experience with pay because I've worked this job X amount of years, I deserve X amount of money. And if you've never had the experience or the opportunity to even get in the door, then how can you get what you deserve as in a monetary way? And so that's interesting to me, because now we're having to again work our way back up into trying to get what we deserve, and understanding that we didn't, you know, we're having to push through the door in a way that we didn't have those experiences that the men had early on to just coach teams, to be in meetings, to be in businesses, and to understand these roles that are available and how to do the roles. So that, you know, they're 10 steps ahead of us. And I feel like it's a constant game of catch up. And, you know, I'm so adamant about the fact that I'm willing to run that race and get there and do whatever is necessary so that people who come behind me can get whatever they need. I'll fight the good fight so that women can excel right now and in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Noelle. Oh, go ahead, Muffet.
Well, we're kind of taught to never expect more, to go along, to get along, to be a good sport, to take whatever we get and be happy with it. And so we never ask for more. And then we have the idea that, well, when I'm successful, that's when I'm going to go in and ask for more. When I achieve something, that's when I'm going to go in and speak my mind and say, this really isn't equal. So I think you're right. I think we just sell ourselves short because that's the way we were trained.
Yeah, I would say that's very true. It's that, what's that phrase? You get what you get and you don't get upset. That works in preschool. That's it. I'm kidding. Noelle, Muffet, thank you both so much for being with us today. That's going to do it for us today. And if you aren't already doing so, you should follow us at On Her Turf. That's on Instagram and Twitter. Lolo's all over it. What are you waiting for? And you can listen to conversations from today over on Apple Podcasts. Until tomorrow, for Lolo, I'm Lindsay. Bye-bye.
This podcast is presented by NordicTrack from iFIT.